has a secret. It's for keeps.
It was just a shock to see what kind of real person she was.
A restaurateur with service to die for.
She developed the idea that the best way to handle family problems was to simply get rid of them.
A beautiful wife with a need for attention.
To call her a femme fatale would be an understatement.
And a murdering mom who disappears in plain view.
She thought she had found the perfect system of committing murder.
These deadly women are not what they seem. They hide behind secrets and lies. For the well-heeled of Macon, Georgia, there is only one place to lunch in 1947.
It was a real good restaurant. The judges ate there, the doctors, lawyers, the people that lived and worked downtown would all go in there for lunch and for coffee during the day.
Something brings customers back. That something is 25-year-old Anjette Miles.
Anjette was very good at dealing with people that came into the restaurant, and she shined. That was her world.
Anjette was a very beautiful woman. She had a gorgeous face and very good complexion.
Yeah, I get you a straw too. Absolutely.
Everybody loved Anjette.
Judge J. Taylor Phillips remembers the service at Lyle's restaurant as a young lawyer.
She would come and sit with you sometimes and talk with you. And she was just a nice person.
But Anjette's thrilling career is about to be ripped from under her. Her husband, owner Ben, has had enough.
What are you doing with our son?
Ask him.
What's going on?
I sold it.
You sold it? You sold the restaurant?
What happened? Ben sells the family restaurant, along with his wife's dreams.
What about my baby? It's worth twice that.
I'm sick of running this place.
Oh, you're sick of running this place. Well, that's just fantastic, okay?
But he will regret it.
She tried to cast all kinds of spells. She had had all these candles that she burned. Green was for money. And red was for love. Of course, the black candle was for death.
Anjette believes in black magic. But when she really wants something, she also turns to more practical agents.
She used an ant poison. It was called tarot ant poisoning. And it was supposedly very sweet to attract ants.
And a clever murderer can put it into any different type of food, and the victim may have no idea that they're ingesting it.
Ben Lyles has been sick with rheumatic fever since his time in the service. But once he sells the restaurant, Ben rapidly deteriorates.
There can be bleeding from the nose and mouth. Swelling of the soft tissues around the eyes. Weeping skin lesions, and there can be the onset of acute liver failure.
Nobody could quite pinpoint it. Nobody could figure out what it was.
Author Jacqueline Weldon has documented the painful death of Anjette's husband. a death doctors attribute to encephalitis.
I think it was almost a committee decision to come up with a cause of death because they could not pinpoint anything else.
Well, how are you doing? Thank you so much. That's fantastic.
The life insurance payout and the proceeds of her husband's sale. Anjette buys back her passion.
I know. I love the walls too.
It's under new management.
It became more popular than it had ever been. It was open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
Hi there. I'm so glad you guys. I've been smelling throughout the street.
Oh, I'll do this one. You take yourself a seat.
Thank you.
One happy customer is Joe Gabbert. A dashing pilot from Texas.
Well, excuse me, Chef. Can I please just get two drinks? I'm gonna sit right down here. Okay, then.
So, what's your name?
My name's Anjette.
As soon as he saw her, he was captivated by her.
Thank you. I just couldn't stop myself from coming in from outside.
Oh, really?
He told her that night he was gonna marry her.
I'm gonna marry you.
He courted her very energetically. And in just a few months, she agreed to marry him.
But Joe is flying into trouble. His new wife is not what she seems. Within months of walking down the aisle, Joe will be dead.
Anjette is pretty much of a sociopath. She has no feelings of empathy or love for anyone.
Before she's 30, Anjette Lyles has been widowed twice. The secret to her misfortune: arsenic poison. First husband, Ben, dies shortly after selling the family restaurant. Second husband, Joe, dies of a mysterious illness after just 3 months of marriage. But instead of mourning, Anjette is thriving in her restaurant.
She was not the grieving widow. She was laughing and talking to people, friendly like, you know, just like it was a big, big ball.
It looks like Anjette has gotten away with murder twice. With another life insurance payout, she buys a new home. But then, a complication.
And her mother-in-law announced that she'd move in with her. I don't think Anjette had planned on that. But Julia Lyles moved into the house with Anjette and her grandchildren.
Well, thank you very much for smoking.
But Anjette finds a way to eliminate her problem. And make even more money.
Anjette had discovered that her mother-in-law had a great deal of money in savings in a couple of banks in Atlanta, upwards of $40,000-$50,000.
So the way to fix it is just if we get a lawyer to sign away on her will, leaving the money to me?
Anjette was a money person. She was interested in money.
So you just sign your name there?
She tried to get me to witness a will of Ms. Lyles.
I can't sign this.
Oh, you can?
I can't sign this. I need to witness their signature here.
And I wouldn't do it because it wasn't her signature. I could tell it was. I'd seen her signature before, and it just wasn't hers.
Oh, okay, man. That's fine. That's
Anjette is forging her mother-in-law's will because Julia Lyles doesn't have long to live.
She would take her things like buttermilk and chicken pot pie. Things that she would tell the staff were her favorites. A lot of people would comment and say, you know, I'm so impressed by Anjette.
But it's a lethal devotion.
Somewhere in Anjette's mind, she developed the idea that the best way to handle family problems was to simply get rid of them. Get rid of them by murder.
Of all Anjette's poisonings, there will be one that trumps them all.
That's really good luck. You should make a wish.
What is all this talking? Don't you have things to do, Mel? What are you looking at? Well, I don't care that you found a nickel. Nobody cares that you found a nickel.
Her daughter simply became an accessory that she didn't want anymore.
You're always talking and yelling and saying things and nobody cares.
I'm not sure she ever loved that child, really. She just acted ugly to that child every time I've ever seen her.
Sit yourself down. I have just had about enough with you.
Daughter
you're always
Marcia
talking and you're always running in here.
Will also
place
die
of business.
In an arsenic-induced nightmare.
And they don't care.
The child was having hallucinations. She saw bugs crawling on her. Anjette was standing in a corner laughing, as though she found it very amusing.
But this murder changes everything. A young child, suddenly dead, makes no sense at all.
The doctors at the time could find other explanations for the deaths of the two husbands, but Marcia was, to all appearances, a healthy child.
Police demand an autopsy.
And within a very short time, the results came back, and Marcia had died of arsenic poisoning. They exhumed Ben Lyle's body, and they exhumed Julia Lyle's body, and again, found traces of arsenic in both of those bodies.
Anjette's secrets are finally revealed. Far from the vivacious host with a run of bad luck, she's a serial killer with no mercy.
People just could not believe that this woman that they thought they knew so well and liked so much could have done this.
It was just a shock to see what kind of real person she was.
Anjette Lyles is convicted of multiple murders and sentenced to death. But she appeals on the grounds of insanity and is diagnosed a paranoid schizophrenic.
She said, well, they think I'm crazy. If they don't think I'm crazy, they're going to fry my ass, so they have to think I'm crazy.
Anjette is spared execution and lives out her life in an asylum. She dies of a heart attack at age 55, but her charm survives to this day.
A lot of people never thought she was evil. I think a lot of people thought that she was just had some mental quirk and that caused all of it, and it really wasn't her fault.
Anjette was a very high-functioning, dedicated, driven, successful businesswoman. That is not a description of a paranoid schizophrenic. Anjette was crazy like a fox.
Some secrets aren't very far from the surface.
She needed the sexual attention of a lot of men to feel good about herself.
Others are deeper.
That is a very cold-blooded individual. To call her a femme fatale would be an understatement.
In the case of Susan Grund,
Susan is a very intelligent, very witty, very lovable person.
You have to decide which secret to believe. In Peru, Indiana.
Hi, Susan.
Hi,
Gary.
The 1980s will be a whirlwind.
You alone?
For the girl they called One Night Stand Sue Ann.
So, how you been?
Yeah, pretty good.
Susan, who was actually born and raised as Sue Ann, had a bit of a racy reputation at high school. She certainly liked the boys, and the boys seemed to like her.
It appears that Susan had a lot of difficulty attaching to one man and staying with him and being faithful to him. Wasn't in her DNA.
At 17, Susan is married to a country singer. But she's already moved on to her next lover.
Gary Campbell, who lived in the same apartment block. And in a quite extraordinary move, she literally took her clothes from one apartment into Gary Campbell's and set up home with him and married him.
True crime author Wensley Clarkson has charted a long line of trouble trailing Susan Grund.
Susan gave birth to Jacob, a first child with Gary Campbell, but unfortunately, she was convicted of child abuse on Jacob, and her husband, Gary Campbell, took custody of the child.
Susan's need, which I believe was to be seen as a sexy woman by a lot of men, overruled her need to be a good wife.
Susan moves to a new town, and husband number three. She becomes pregnant again, but the marriage doesn't last long enough for the birth.
So what does she do? She hotfoots it back to Peru, pregnant with a second child.
At 25 and pregnant, Susan meets husband number four, Jimmy Grund.
Once again, Susan bewitched a man. It's quite extraordinary, this. She's pregnant. She goes on a blind date with Jimmy Grund, and soon after that, they fall in love and get married.
Susan must have thought the skies had opened for her when she met Jimmy Grund. He was educated, he had money, he had prestige. He was way out of her league. And yet, he was drawn to her.
Against the odds, Susan becomes a big name in her hometown.
Jim and Susan played a role in, I guess, high Peru society, if there is one. It's a very small town, but they were the upper crust.
J.W. Lee befriended Susan years later. He says she enjoyed the marriage.
They had a lot of good times together. She's relayed a lot of fond memories of her marriage to Jim with me, and it seemed like they had a pretty good one.
But the town is starting to talk. Perhaps One Night Stand Sue Ann might not have disappeared completely.
Not long after marrying Jimmy, there were rumors beginning to circulate in Peru about her having affairs with other men.
Susan seems to be keeping secrets again. But this time, it will end in murder.
Was he so bewitched by her that he didn't question any of her behavior?
Little Sue Ann has transformed herself.
Yeah, pretty good.
From poor trailer trash to Susan Grund, wealthy, influential wife of a prominent attorney. But it's about to collapse around her.
There were many facets to Susan's personality. One of them was to be the sexy, desirable woman. And the other was to be the socialite, prestigious wife married to a successful man. They didn't mix.
So this is the guy?
Wow.
One rumor has Susan sleeping with her stepson, David Grund.
So how do you use it?
Safety? Off?
There were plenty who doubted and plenty who knew that it was true.
Do you have to cock it?
You have to cut this one. It's ready to go. Ready to shoot.
David totally denied ever having had relations with her, which is to be expected. But enough people in the town knew what was going on.
There's one thing on which everyone agrees.
Aim this at your target. Arms straight.
David owns a 9mm handgun.
Perfect.
It was rumored that Susan had many affairs. I heard things from my family, and nobody was fond of her in my family.
Kama Grund, Jimmy's niece, is just a child when her uncle's marriage starts to fall apart.
Speculation of the family was that he told her he wanted a divorce.
Susan's behavior finally pushes Jimmy too far.
What do you think?
And he started to question a lot of aspects of her character, finally, and then started to push for a divorce.
How dare you!
You dare me to do what?
I'll get half of everything.
You're not gonna get a cent!
And then, something extraordinary happens.
The local police got a call from Susan saying she'd found her husband shot, sitting on a sofa, and the house was ransacked, and obviously someone had broken in and decided to shoot Jimmy Grund.
The Grund family don't believe it's robbery. They think it's cold-blooded murder.
Something didn't add up about this so-called break-in. The police themselves were mystified because it's so rare that a break-in results in a shooting.
There's just one clue, implicating Jimmy's son, David.
Jimmy Grund was shot with a 9mm pistol, and by an extraordinary coincidence, his own son owned a 9mm pistol, which he'd reported stolen just a week earlier.
Police can't find the murder weapon because Susan hides it.
The reason that Susan picked up the gun at all and hid the murder weapon was because she knew that it was Jim's son's gun. Susan was trying to protect him.
The Grunds think Susan is protecting herself after staging a robbery to collect $250,000 in life insurance.
The police worked incredibly hard on this case because they knew virtually from the beginning that Susan had to be the guilty party.
Susan confides in her sister and her mother, who help hide the murder weapon. But their secrecy lasts only a few months.
Eventually, Susan's sister cracked. She couldn't cope with the knowledge of knowing what her sister had done.
They arrested Susan in November, almost exactly 3 months from the date of Jim's death. Charged her with murder.
At the trial, Susan claims innocence, but admits to hiding the gun to protect her lover, Jimmy's son, David.
Susan claimed that David had decided that the only way to get rid of Jimmy so that they could be together was to murder his father. David Grund denied categorically that this so-called affair had ever occurred with Susan, and he was charged as an accessory but then acquitted.
It was very well known that David had an alibi and had nothing to do with his father's death.
But the jury is left in doubt and deadlocked. It takes a second trial in March 1994 to convict Susan Grund of murder. She's serving 60 years in prison.
Despite all her planning, all her scheming, all her connivingness, all her artfulness, Susan Grund got sentenced to life.
Susan's fiancé, J.W. Lee, believes justice was not served.
Susan is innocent of murder. Susan will be eligible for parole in 2019. When she comes home from prison, it'll be a whole brand new life for her.
For some, Susan's release will right a terrible wrong. Others believe she should stay where she belongs.
I think that Jimmy Grund was a means to an end for Susan Grund. When she found that he was about to pull that away from her, she found herself with no choice but to murder him.
Everybody knew that she had done it.
Some secrets are so shocking.
She was cold, calculating, and cunning.
No one is willing to believe.
Some people are very, very skilled at lying.
One woman is about to meet her maker.
I don't really think she had a conscience.
And she has a lot to repent.
Anyone who will kill in the slow and extremely cruel fashion in which she did it, I think that is nothing but evil.
Frank Hilly arrives home from work early, one afternoon in Anniston, Alabama.
Oh, yes. Oh, Lord, yes.
He's expecting to find his wife in the kitchen. But she's in the bedroom.
Frank!
Walter.
Marie Hilly is sleeping with her boss.
Get dressed. Get out.
And this isn't her first infidelity.
Marie was having not one, but maybe multiple affairs with people.
Author R. Robin McDonald believes Marie chased the money and affections of more successful men.
It was clear that she had affairs with men who she felt could do something for her, that she needed something from.
stuck with husband Frank and his modest income.
What Marie really wanted out of life was to spend lots of money, preferably other people's, and do whatever she wanted to do.
Marie decides on a new strategy. Life insurance. On her husband. In 1975, he's struck by a mystery illness.
Are you sure about this stuff?
He couldn't keep food down.
Absolutely.
He could not keep anything on his stomach. Violent illness.
Marie tells her husband she has an antidote.
Swears by it.
Apparently supplied by her doctor.
Frank had said to his sisters, Marie is going to have to learn how to give me shots. She says the doctor has told her she needs to give me shots.
But far from helping, Marie's injections are secretly killing her husband with arsenic from rat poison.
By injecting arsenic in a very high concentration and injecting it directly into the body, there was absolutely no doubt that the full dose was delivered. This was a death sentence for Frank.
Within weeks, Marie goes shopping. With a $31,000 insurance payout,
you have to put that in perspective of the time and place. This was 1975. It was a small town in Alabama. $31,000 sounded like a lot of money then.
Marie poisoned her husband solely to get the insurance money and to be rid of him.
But Marie's newfound wealth doesn't last. Her constant spending drains her account, and she needs another source of income.
Oh, hello, darling. You feeling anything?
Her daughter Carol is now in the hospital with a mystery illness.
Did you bring the medicine?
Yes, I did. Now remember what I said. Well, no one can know about this.
Huh?
Doctors are baffled, but Marie knows exactly what's wrong.
I think that she thought she had found the perfect system of committing murder because arsenic poisoning mimics so many different symptoms.
After murdering her husband for insurance money, Marie's now trying to kill her daughter.
She insured her life, and she wanted the money.
Hi, Carol.
But before Marie can kill again, there's a breakthrough.
A doctor looked at Carol's fingernails and saw the half moons, the traditional signs of arsenic poisoning.
In Carol's case, the doctor was astute and was beginning to put together what had happened, particularly in light of Frank's death.
Carol is saved. But to convict Marie, police need more evidence of poison. So they exhume her dead husband.
Frank had over 100 times the arsenic poisoning, or arsenic in him that he should have had as well.
The evidence incriminates Marie in the murder and attempted murder of her own family.
Hello, Marie. Hello, Carol.
Well, hello to you, Gary.
Marie, do you mind if we have a word in private?
No. Is anything wrong?
Let's talk outside.
The town of Anniston can scarcely believe it.
When Marie Hilly was arrested, people were actually stunned. I think the nature of the crimes themselves and the suspicion of what had happened and the potential brutality of it
really shocked Aniston.
The most shocked of all, daughter Carol.
I feel sorry for her because she not only was the subject of someone trying to kill her, it wasn't just someone, this was her mother.
Marie Hilly might have killed her entire family had she not been caught. But instead of receiving justice, Marie has other plans. Her deceits are not over. Marie Hilly is leaving town before anyone catches her. She's skipping bail after being charged with her husband's murder and the attempted murder of her daughter.
After Marie left Aniston, she went to Florida where she assumed an alias. It's Robbie Hannon. She met a man and subsequently married him, became Robbie Homan.
Blissfully ignorant of her deadly history, Joan Homan is head over heels.
Chicken's delicious.
Oh, thank you. I'm so pleased you enjoyed it.
Like everyone else in Marie's life, he gets a surprise.
No, not for me.
Oh, come on.
After 2 years reborn as Robbie Hannon, she tells her husband she has a fatal illness.
I'm taking new medicine.
Robbie's condition has worsened.
John Homan was not terribly bright and very accepting, almost gullible in a way.
That's why I'm going back to Texas. There's a
specialist. She claims a doctor in Texas can help her.
I sure hope so, honey.
Robbie has an identical twin sister.
And that she can stay with her twin sister there.
You have a twin sister?
Yes, I have.
Lies.
Well,
on top of lies.
She couldn't possibly be as lovely as you.
It was like she had fantasized and created this person in her mind. And you know, who knows, maybe she did exist in her own mind.
Marie is reborn again as Terry Martin.
She assumed the role of the twin, called her husband, and told him that his wife had died.
She decided that she wanted to leave that identity behind. And when she was gone, nothing else that was any better had come along. So she decided that she would just go back and move in with John again as a twin sister.
I'd like you to meet our lovely neighbors. Brad and Susie, they were great friends with Robbie.
Well, hello to you.
Hi.
I've heard a lot about you two.
She had lost a good bit of weight, 50 pounds. She had bleached her dark hair blonde.
Uncanny, isn't it?
That's amazing.
Unbelievable.
John was fairly convinced that that was not his his wife, that was his wife's sister that had come back.
I just want to say for both of us that we are so, so sorry to hear about your loss.
John
Thank
and
you so
Terry
much. I really appreciate
pick
it.
Up where John and Robbie left off.
Can I offer you some wine?
Sure. Yeah.
That'd be lovely. Thanks.
Marie liked to play games with people. She thought she was smarter than everyone else. She actually thought she could come back as the twin sister of a man she was married to. She may have fooled him, but she didn't fool anyone else.
Friends don't believe Terry's story and call the police.
They ask her, "We have reason to believe you are not Terry Martin. Who are you?"
Backed into a corner, about to be exposed, Marie tells the truth for once in her life.
She told them, "My name is Audrey Marie Hilly."
Marie is arrested again, destined for her original murder trial. there will be one more twist.
Yeah, I remember it well. I was in the office, and in fact, I was quite upset about it because nobody was notified locally that Marie had even been given a furlough.
Incredibly, Marie is given another chance at bail. And once again, she makes a run for it.
I just totally couldn't believe it. It was beyond belief. And I just, in my mind, I thought, well, if she gets out of town, you know, she's going to be gone and she'll melt right in again. And she's good at doing that.
But this time, the master deceiver will not succeed. During her last days on the lam, in dreadful weather, Marie faces justice she's eluded for 3 years.
There's a report came on the radio that there was a white female on the outskirts of Anniston, and she was wandering around, and it appeared that she was soaking wet, and she was disoriented, and in fact, I think they said she was even crawling around on the grass. She died of hypothermia just sometime later there that day.
Marie Hilly can no longer fool those who loved her.
I think it's easier for a woman to hide a dark secret because people simply don't suspect women of being evil.
They are beyond suspicion, and all the more deadly. Anne Jett Lyle's social skills masked her true vocation as a skillful murderer. Susan Grun's secrets were not believed when it counted. She's still arguing to this day. Hilly thought she could run away from herself. Justice tracked her down. They each could keep their secrets and lies through the tragic silence of their victims.